The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yes, this is your Don't Panic. There's still 75, 76 games left.
It's all over. Burn in the it season. Down. Train everyone. Fire tips.
Wow, though. Derek, these last two games, man. I mean, we're taping this on a Friday before the Wolves play Oklahoma City, before they host them.
Hopefully they saved enough money to tear down Target Center and build a playground.
Yeah, man. Indiana was just bad, and then
I was fine in this, as fine as you can be with a loss like the Indiana game.
Sure,
it's like, all right,
me too.
One bad game where you find out Jimmy Butler's not going to play probably that morning.
Yep.
And it's one bad game in a sample. Fine, you probably just throw it out because it's just seemingly such an outlier.
Yep.
But then they come back the next night in Detroit,
and you're thinking, okay, they realize they laid an egg the night before at home. Maybe they'll come out angry and with more purpose and playing a little bit harder and all of that. And it looked like it for about the first 4 minutes of the game when it was 9-0. But that second quarter was woof. That was bad. And so they lose to Detroit. And now here we are, and people are upset, rightfully upset, I think, and they're just trying to figure out what's wrong.
You want to be playing your worst when you're facing a team like the Thunder, like they are Friday night, tonight, depending on when you're listening to this. That's what I always say, that you want to play the best teams playing your worst.
Yeah. Raised by Wolves, by the way, is sponsored by TCL, which is America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And it's great that we have the Thunder in town on this Friday, because we have a gentleman in studio with us who covers the Oklahoma City Thunder. Fred Katz is here with us. He covers the Thunder for the Norman Transcript. How are you, sir?
I'm just wonderful. I'm so glad you guys let me grace you with my company.
Well, we're glad to have you, and glad you were able to come in studio. Obviously, you're in town to cover the Thunder as well, since they're in town too. But
I actually just kidnapped him. He had no choice.
Just grabbed him at the airport and just brought him here.
Well, yeah. Honestly, it is like 17 degrees and there are 48 inches of snow on the ground. So
welcome
to
Minnesota, man.
Anyone who was willing to put me in their car, I was like, I'm down. I'm getting in. I don't care. It could have been the creepiest van in human existence. I was like, done.
Do you have heat? All right, I'm getting in.
Yeah, 100%.
Were you expecting this when you first, I don't know when you may have found out that you were actually going to be coming here to cover the Thunder, but were you expecting it?
I checked my phone app. I'm used to snow a little bit in October. I did go to Syracuse for my freshman year of college,
okay, and sure.
I remember it being like a crazy snowstorm the first Friday of Halloween weekend, which is, I guess, this exact same thing.
Yeah.
There was a crazy snowstorm, and everyone like wondering, what do we do? Because we have costumes, we have to wear jackets. It was like this huge like problem, which would only be a problem when you're like in the collegiate stage of your life. But this is horrible. I actually like Minneapolis as a city, but in this instance, I just can't wait to leave. And the next place to go is Chicago too. It's like, I'm going to Chicago for warmer weather. It's like, all right, you guys got to calm down a little bit.
So let's talk about the Thunder a little bit. This has to be, when the season ended last year and Russ gets the MVP. Could you have imagined that in a couple months, Paul George and Carmelo Anthony were also going to be playing on the team?
No. I mean, not in the least. Like, even Sam Presti at his exit interview, this is like the first week of May, Sam Presti does his end of season interview, and the theme that he had throughout that entire press conference was continuity. I think he used the word continuity like eight times, and a lot of people were thinking, oh, you know, that's a problem. How could they have continuity? They had all these issues with the roster, and it was Russ and everybody else, and that was the narrative for the whole season. But there was the other side of the coin, which was they were the youngest team in the playoffs last year. They had the youngest average age of any team in the playoffs, and they had guys like Steven Adams and Canner and Jeremy Grant and Alex Abrines and Doug McDermott, and all those guys were 25 or younger, and there are a couple more I'm leaving off too. Terrence Ferguson, who they just drafted, is 19 years old, and they wanted to develop guys, or at least that's what they said.
Sabonis was still pretty young.
Sabonis is 21.
Yeah.
Sabonis is 21. So they had all those guys, and then Sam Presti went around, and it was just, Brought in veterans, couldn't have been the most. Even like the Patterson and Felton signings. I mean, those are uncharacteristic to a degree for the Thunder too, because they're not signing veterans like that. Like the Patterson contract is the most money they've ever given to another team's free agent.
And that was a gift.
Yeah.
I mean, that was amazing how little they got Patterson for.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he did end up having the scope on his knee, but I mean, I agree. Like, that was
That's arthroscopic surgery in 2017, though.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm with you. Like, getting him for the taxpayer mid-level is perfectly
good.
Well, and
fans here were upset. They're like, well, why did we give Taj Gibson that money when Patrick Patterson got that? And it's like, well, Patrick Patterson wasn't taking that deal to come play here. I think people really forget that. It's not exactly the same situation.
Yeah, for sure.
What did you think when they do make the Paul George trade, and considering what they gave up, what did you think about what they gave up for the return with Paul George? And at that time, and I know Paul George has said some different things since then, but at that time, you're bringing in Paul George thinking that he's going to be here for a year, and then he's going to go off to the Lakers, you know, next offseason. You know, who knows what may happen between now and when that time comes. I mean, if they go to the NBA Finals, I don't know if you're Paul George, if it'd be as easy to walk away.
I
want to
play for
a
lottery team again.
Right. But at that time, considering what they gave up for him, for a guy who was essentially going to be a one-year rental, what were your thoughts on when they made that move at that time?
If you can bring in a top 15 guy the Oladipo contract was a contract they gave him 4 years and $84 million on an extension, which kicked in for this year. And they didn't hate it, but I think they eventually grew to not think as highly of that deal as the year went on last year. I think they liked Oladipo as a player just as much, but I do think they disliked his fit with Russ a little bit more. Like in the beginning of the year, they were trying to run Oladipo off of down screens. They were trying to have him run a little bit more pick and roll to be a complimentary ball handler next to Russ, so Russ didn't have to do as much. And Russ just kind of waved them all off. Like Oladipo would run off pin downs in the middle of the floor, and Russ would just be like, no, you're taking out the middle of the floor, and I want to drive. And it would just leave another defender to guard Russ when he would randomly drive.
Yeah.
And so they kind of ended up just sticking Oladipo in the corner, and he's a fine shooter, and I think he's gotten better than he was 3 years ago, and he's probably even better now than he was last year, but guys still weren't guarding him. Guys were pulling off of him, guarding Russ in the lane. He's just not that guy you want in the corner, and you don't want your secondary ball handler in the corner either, because if you have to give it to him late in a possession, he's only got one direction to go. He is literally cornered. So it created an awkward situation for the offense from just like a fit and a schematic standpoint, and I think the fact that they were able to unload him for a guy like George, and they like Sabonis. They like Sabonis a lot. But if you're able to bring in a guy of Paul George's quality, even if it's for 1 year, you make that move. Like, that immediately jumped them up in the Western Conference hierarchy, and that's even before we talk about the Carmelo trade.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Carmelo trade, because I think parting with Enes Kanter had to have been pretty easy, right? Because, I mean, we look at a guy like that. We know he's pretty good offensively, but the defense is just—it's just bad. Enes Kanter's just not a good defensive player at all. So I think if you can make a move like that for Carmelo,
I think he's probably even a better offensive rebounder than defensive rebounder.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, at that point, if you're giving up an Enes Kanter to bring in Carmelo, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend like Carmelo's a world beater defensively either, but I mean, Carmelo's a star. I mean, he's been a star. He's not as good as he was maybe 2-3 years ago, but he's still a star player. He's
one of the best scorers in the
game. Yeah, he can score from almost anywhere on the floor, so I think that was probably a pretty easy move to make, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you talk about Kanter's defense, same thing with Doug McDermott. Like, it's this weird thing where somebody said to me, so I'm from New York, and so, like, pretty much all my friends from growing up are Knicks fans to, like, varying degrees of intensity, and one of my best friends from growing up is this ginormous, diehard, season ticket holder Knicks fan. And as soon as they make the Melo trade, he texts me, how do we give up Melo and get worse defensively? Which is a great, miserable Knicks fan text to receive, because they're all so miserable.
My cousin Derek is he's from here in Minnesota, but he's a diehard Knicks fan. Like, so every move that the Knicks have made for like the last 10 years, he has.
There is no Knicks
hated
exceptionalism right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, so I'm a Jets fan, so I can relate to that, like, sure, self-deprecating, constantly miserable sense of being a fan, you know. And I just thought that was like a funny piece of analysis, because it's probably true. And Melo actually, I mean, through four games, I don't think it's really going to keep up to this degree, but he's been like not horrible defensively with the Thunder. He's been playing pretty solid effort as a help defender. And that's kind of all you really want from him. He's been talking a lot. He's been very vocal on the floor, just calling stuff out, calling when he needs the help, calling when screens are there, that kind of stuff. He's been pretty active about that kind of stuff. And that's really all you want, because they've got other, I mean, Paul George is a great defender. Andre Robertson is when he's going right. I mean, he's still recovering from some knee stuff he had in the offseason, but last year he was one of the 2, 3, 4 best perimeter defenders in the NBA.
Yeah.
Steven Adams is an excellent defensive anchor. So you've already got those three guys out there with your starters who are very good to great defensive players. And all you really need are just guys who are communicators and are going to just help when they need to help, and that's about it. And you're going to have a pretty darn good defense. And if he just does that, then the Thunder defense is going to be fine. I don't know if he's going to keep that up, because he's never really done that in the first 14 years he's played, but he's done it for the first 4 at least. Something encouraging.
Did you think it was funny that when he was in New York, it was, no, I'm not playing the 4. I'm a 3. And then he gets to OKC and it's like, yeah, I'll play the 4. Sure, why not?
Yes. Yes. I thought it was hilarious.
It's like,
actually,
screw you, Phil.
Yes. I think I tweeted something along the lines of, like, when he said that on Media Day, I think I tweeted something along the lines of, like, that sound you just heard is every Knicks fan in New York bashing his head into their desk. But well, yeah. So, but I think the league changing had something to do with that.
Yeah.
Like, I think the fact that, like, fours are mostly people like Melo today, especially in, like, starting units and stuff, like, fours are mostly guys like Melo. Like the four has become what
he's not seen like a Zach Randolph guy who's just going to beat him up for, you know, 40
exactly.
minutes a game
anymore. Exactly. He's just not really seeing that. And if he is, he's seeing it not very often. And also, like, so far, like, Paul George has guarded those guys. When it's like a really big four, it's been Paul George a lot of the time. So we saw Paul George guard Anthony Davis when they played New Orleans in the preseason, that kind of stuff. So he's still kind of guarding those threes, at least from what we've seen so far. And yeah, I mean, you know, if you have to guard a four who's just a stretch, catch, and shoot guy, that's not that hard. You're not going to get banged in the post.
You're not chasing a more true wing type guy all over the place and trying to fight through screens and all that stuff. So it has
See, that
to, be
to me is just a different kind of exhausting. Like, I know I'm only like relating this to like pickup basketball, but it's like, do I chase the little guy around who's going to make me run the entire time, or do I catch elbows for the entire game? I mean, it's one thing or the other. You really kind of just pick your.
You got to do what I do. I'm like the ultimate fake effort guy. I'll dive for a ball, but I'll never run back on defense.
They'll just remember that you dove for that ball.
Right. But if you dive for a ball, like one out of every 10 possessions or something, people are like, wow, whatever. Yeah,
Fred's,
that's amazing.
Fred's hustling,
you
man.
You set
look
like a super
doing.
Dirty screen. They don't think that like you're a dirty player. They're just like, oh, he's playing hard. but you're just being a not good guy.
What is it like covering Russell Westbrook? Because he is, I love watching him play. I thought it was great that he got the MVP last year. He has just always fascinated me, just as, certainly as a player, but also just as a person. I've always just been just really intrigued every time he talks, even though he clearly doesn't like talking to the media at all.
Oh, really?
what is it like sort of, I guess, dealing with him on a semi-daily basis?
It's extremely difficult. Yeah. It's like, it's really hard. Because the thing is, people see, like, the stuff that goes viral, you know, him, you know, shaming guys or whatever it is, and people see that, and they're like, well, at least you get a quote. First, it's not really a quote. Like,
no.
It's a moment that goes viral on Twitter, but it's never anything I put in an article or that. Or
you
that
can't
I,
do anything no. with it.
Also, like, it's just a dude publicly shaming someone. At some point, it's like, you're 28 years old. Like, why are you taking so much pride in doing this? Like, you're married with a
child.
Just
being a jerk for the sake of being a jerk.
Yeah, why are you doing that? And other than that, I mean, the good days are when he's just, like, he'll give you a few cliches, and that's about it. What's hard is that you don't really know when he's in an irritable mood. Irritable mood? Irritated mood? One of the two.
When he's irritable?
Yeah, when he's irritable. There you go. You don't really know. Sometimes he'll come over and he'll look like he's in a perfectly fine mood, and you'll ask him the most mundane, easiest softball question, and for some reason, it just won't go well. And then just everything is off after that. What's nice is that, like, so last year we kind of had to get Russ because He was the eventual MVP of the league. He was having an historic season, and he was really the only, you know, huge name that people cared about on the team. Like, Steven Adams is an amazing guy to
cover. People weren't, like, beating down the doors for more Kyle Singler content.
Exactly. Like, Steven Adams is a great guy to cover, and he and Canner I would always go to, because those two guys are just, like, amazing to cover, incredible mm-hmm. personalities, and awesome guys who enjoy talking to media and will always give you a good quote.
Yeah.
But, like, people care more about Russ, obviously, because he's Russ. But this year, it's like, we don't necessarily have that need, and Russ really does not like talking to us, and has had some moments this year where he just has just decided he's not going to speak
wow.
at all, like in the moment. And but it's kind of okay now because Melo's great.
Yeah,
he's an awesome mm-hmm. interview, and he's smart, and he's introspective, and he's got this charming personality. He's got a great sense of humor. You can ask him hard questions, and he'll give you respectful answers as long as you ask the questions in a respectful way and not a way that you're just kind of trying to,
that's fair.
You know, stir stuff up. And Paul George is extremely similar, so it's kind of nice. And then you got Adams, who, like, in my opinion, might be the best interview in the league. And it's nice. It's nice to be able to have that kind of team around him. Where Russ, you get him when he's not actually interviewing. He's fine. He's like a nice, normal guy. He just when he gets in those moments, just. Good luck.
He seems like a guy, and I think Lee Jenkins did a piece on him, and it's worth about Oklahoma City just being the perfect fit for him because he's such a low-key guy and doesn't necessarily need all that attention. So I think he tries to kind of discourage it.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's like a really good fit between him and the Thunder is that the Thunder are extremely strict about media.
What comes out.
Right. Mm. They are very controlling about media, and they can be – their PR guys are great people. They're like awesome, mm-hmm. awesome people. I'm not even just saying that because I have to work with them. They're great people, but it makes it difficult when you're somebody who has to cover the team from like a professional standpoint, to where they're tough. They want to keep everything in house. They never leak anything. Like, there was this point in the draft last year where, you know, Woj and Shams and whomever else are leaking all the picks, right? And then it gets up to the and they're like five picks ahead in the draft of where everybody else is. And then it gets up to the Thunder's pick, and there's just no reports for like 18 minutes until it gets to the Thunder pick. And then finally, Woj breaks it, or Shams breaks it, I forget which one, like 30 seconds before it's announced on TV. And it's because the Thunder just don't leak.
Well,
like, they never leak.
Well, Derek, you remember the day the Melo trade happened. I think mm-hmm. you were like taking a nap, and
yep.
It was a Saturday morning, and I'm sitting there getting ready to watch, you know, college.
I went
football
for a run when the Paul George trade broke, so I checked yep. my phone and wow. And then I woke up from a nap and was like, "Oh, Carmelo Anthony's in Oklahoma City now."
Yeah, yeah, it was like because yeah. I remember
Paul George too, man. Paul George, it's like yeah. no one. I cover the team. My job is to know as much as I possibly can about what's going on with them. And Paul George happened, and I was like, "What?"
And Manny, our reaction was like, "We never heard anything about Oklahoma City."
Yeah. Yeah, like I saw the Melo news break, and I was thinking, okay, it's Saturday morning. Did this happen like last night? And I just now realizing. And remember, I even texted Derek, and I was like, "Whoa, Paul George in Oklahoma City? Is this like right now, or did this happen last night?" And I'm just now finding out about
right.
it. And Derek's like, I just woke up from a nap. I had no idea either. Like, but yeah, that kind of speaks to what you're talking about. Like, they're very, very tight-lipped with mm-hmm. everything.
Even with the Russ extension, like, I had heard the Thunder were consistently pretty optimistic about the fact that Russ was going to sign.
But he had had that offer for a long time, right?
Yeah, he had had that on July 1st. He didn't sign it until mm-hmm. September 29th. And, like, it just took – no one really knew for sure what Russ's thing, because Russ is just – one thing I do really respect about him is how – private he is, because he's not just like a famous basketball player. Like, he's an A-list celebrity at this point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, he passes the mom test, you know? Like, my mom doesn't know about basketball, but my mom knows who Russell Westbrook is.
He's the guy who wears the basketball player with the colorful shirts.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But, like, my mom knows who Russell Westbrook is. Like, he's an A-list celebrity, and the way that he's able to keep his life, like, his private life, so insulated from everything else is something I wouldn't be able to do that if I were at that level of fame. Like, there's no, I would definitely like tell my brother some stuff. My brother would immediately just like screw me over, go tell reporters because he'd think it was hilarious. And like, I wouldn't be able to do that. So the way he's able to control his own environment, I find to be really impressive. It just makes my life a little more difficult.
How would you rate how Billy Donovan has done? He's in his third year now. And it, to me, just from afar, it seems like this in some ways is like a perfect job for him because he came from the college ranks. And so he's in his third year coaching this team, but he's got like, it seems like he has his third different Thunder team, because the first year they go to the Western Conference Finals and Durant's there, and then KD leaves, and then it's just this team that's sort of centered around Russ and some parts. And then now in year three, he's got two other star players that have just now come to the team. But with him being a college guy who deals
he's used to
that roster turnover every single year, it seems like he's equipped to be able to handle something like that. But from your perspective, how has he done so far?
I think that's a really good point. I think also what I think Billy's a, I think he's a very good coach.
Yeah.
I think he's done a good job. He's a brilliant guy. Like he's kind of got this Rain Man quality where after games, like somehow he'll like be able, like in like his post game press conferences, he'll like cite random sport view numbers that like aren't even out yet. And it's like, how do you know that? And yeah. Like, but he'll be able to know everything. Like he definitely has a photographic memory with numbers. He's extremely analytics driven, and not to the point where it's like it's just like he sees a number and he just knows it and automatically implements it. He's awesome to discuss how to use analytics, how to compare them to video, how to compare what you see, how to implement it, all that kind of stuff. There's definitely criticism for what some of the things that he's done. I think so far the offense is looking pretty my turn, your turn, which is to be expected to a degree. And his rotations can be out of whack at times. But I think for the most part, he's done a good job with this team. He's a really smart guy. And you know, one thing with Billy, which he doesn't really have the reputation of, and he should. So you guys know this because you cover the Wolves. Tom Thibodeau has that reputation of like the guy never sleeps.
Does he?
unless he's like in the office, he never sleeps. Billy is in the practice facility every day by 5:45 to 6 a.m. watching film.
Wow.
Like the days after games, he'll get in. They'll get in from a game at 2:30 in the morning, and Billy will be there the next day at the practice facility by like 6 o'clock watching film. And the guy's work ethic is crazy. Like it's really amazing. And it kind of turns to the team, the Thunder. I think it's why he and Russ get along well to a degree. Mm-hmm. I think they both respect, because Russ has a ridiculous work ethic too. There was a time last year where they actually locked the doors to the practice facility because they wanted to give the team a day off and they thought Russ would come anyway. So they actually locked them. But Billy has this amazing work ethic, which I think is something that's extremely impressive. Like he's also a guy who just doesn't sleep.
I think one thing that I like about Donovan that I've heard, Taj Gibson was speaking at Media Day and asked about the differences between playing, you know, for Fred Hoiberg and Billy Donovan. And his Hoiberg answer was probably what you would expect it to be. But the Billy Donovan answer was about how much he pushed everybody and kind of really just challenged them to expand their game and not just to leave them comfortable with what they're doing, but push them into something, a new area phase of their game, which I think to ask, you know, a veteran like Taj Gibson to do is probably like, hey, I know what I do. I'm going to get my check and we're going to, you know, win some games. I think it's pretty cool that he's able to still push guys no matter what their level is.
That's interesting. I didn't see that quote. Taj is a great guy, by the way.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Wolves fans are going to like him. He's an awesome person. He's a good player still.
Yeah. No, he's been, I think if there is a bright side to the defense that we've seen in these first handful of games, very hard to find, but I think Taj's defense has been pretty good.
I think people were like, oh, now I see why they gave Taj that money.
Well, he's a better player than Patrick Patterson. He can do more. I mean, Patrick Patterson might be a little more of a modern player because he shoots threes.
Yeah.
But like Taj Gibson does more stuff well.
Sure.
Like he's a better one-on-one defender than Patterson. He's probably, even though Patterson's kind of versatile, he's a more versatile guy. You can use him on switches. He's anchored really good defenses before. Better rim protector, better rebounder. Like Gibson's a good player still. If he shot threes, he'd be a way more coveted.
He started
guy.
To add that. That was one thing we heard in preseason. Like, oh, Taj corner threes. And man, he was all about Taj corner threes.
Yeah, I was like, I was all about him if he was going to hit them.
And then he started taking them. I don't know if he's hit one yet.
I don't think he's hit one since the regular season.
But do you even want him in the corner, really? Like, you want him setting ball screens up top. Like, I feel like there are sometimes he can drift to the corner depending on the sets. But, like, I feel like his skill set, like, he has offensive value, even if he's not shooting threes. I feel like a lot of what he does, whether it's setting pin downs or picking and popping, picking and rolling, like, whatever it is, like, it's hard for him to get to the corners out of the stuff that he's
good I think
at.
Anything that gets, you know, Jeff Teague or Andrew Wiggins or Jimmy Butler more space to work is probably a good thing.
That's yeah. a fair point.
So what sort of your thoughts on, I mean, you got a chance to see the Wolves on Sunday.
What you were there, right?
I was there.
Oh boy, that'd be
What's your takeaway? I mean, I know it's just probably just the one game that you've gotten a chance to see with the Wolves, but what's your takeaway from that game and how this whole thing can work? I mean, the people are losing their minds over the last couple games and how they've gone, but you know, from your perspective, you've gotten a chance to get a look at them for one game. What are your thoughts on just the collection of players and Tibbs? And how this whole thing sort of meshes together.
Yeah, I've actually seen them a few times now. I watched that game against San Antonio, and I watched the Pacers game, too.
Okay, so
I've seen them.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that Pacers game was weird, right? I'm surprised by Karl-Anthony Towns' lack of progression defensively.
Yeah.
Like, I'm surprised by it. I know, I thought he was pretty fine, like, judging for, like the for a rookie qualifier, like pretty solid for a rookie. And I thought his defense was very encouraging his rookie season, even though it wasn't great. It was, you know, because rookies never play good defense. So I thought it would be fine. And I thought, and you guys would know better than me, I thought he regressed a little bit last year.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
definitely.
And did not have a good defensive season at all, particularly defending the back ends of pick and rolls. And he doesn't look any different to me this year as a defender. And I just feel like that shouldn't be the case because he's got everything. He's got the physical tools. He's got the speed. He's got the size. He's got the athleticism.
Well, he's a smart player, and he's had continuity finally with Tibbs, so you think it would come through.
Yeah, he's smart. It's not like he's one of those guys where he's just like, oh, my God, what are you doing in every facet?
It's not Anthony Randolph.
Right. Oh, God, no. Like he's, you look at him, it's like, that's a smart guy and a smart player who I've heard has a good work ethic. And like, he should be, I just feel like he should be better. And I'm not writing him off as like a career long bad defender. Like, I'm not doing that yet. He's just way too young and he's way too good for me to do that at this point. I'm just surprised that he's not better, at least, than he was last year, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think the last year, the issue was, Derek, you and I talked about this a lot, where it just seemed like he was kind of freelancing a little bit on defense, where he would try to step out of what Tibbs wanted all five guys on the floor to do, and he would just sort of step off and try and do his own thing, and then that was what was getting him into a lot of trouble. And you would think this offseason he would, you know, pay some attention to that and make some adjustments with that and just say, okay, I don't need to do everything on the floor defensively. I just need to do my part.
Well, I think the big thing too is learning to trust your teammates. And if you have a guy like Taj Gibson, you should be able to trust the guy next to you.
Yeah.
Or you should be able to trust Gorgui Jang, who I don't think is a great defender by any means. And he makes some really boneheaded mistakes on the defensive end, but he's fine mostly. Like, that's a person, a guy you should be able to trust playing next to. So it just seems like he tries to do too much, and it's the wrong thing to do entirely. It's not even really like a hero play.
Right.
He's just trying to do too much. I don't know.
So yeah. I think Taj is going to help him. And I'll tell you what, Thunder, one of the reasons the Thunder felt so comfortable, the Thunder never intended on re-signing him. They knew his market price was going to be too high for them to afford to bring him back. They never thought that they were going to be, I mean, they hoped that they would bring him back because he's a guy who Sam Presti has been a big fan of for a long time. He really, really likes Taj Gibson, and Billy Donovan just like adored having him in that locker room. But one of the reasons that they felt so comfortable bringing him over as a rental wasn't just what he could do for them last year. They just really wanted him around their young guys because they had such a young team. And they, like, you talk to Jeremy Grant about Taj Gibson, and there are like little tricks that Jeremy Grant learned from Taj Gibson that he's implementing this year as a power forward. And so like, they kind of thought like, okay, once Taj Gibson, and this was something that they actually believed, like they believe this. They talked about this internally when they made the trade with the Bulls in February to bring Gibson over for like 25 games. And one of the reasons they did, they were just like, well, you know what? He'll be gone, but like, he is going to work amazingly with the young guys. And like, when he was with Chicago, he was like the most popular teammate I have heard of with the Bulls during that like Bulls team.
We've had Sean Hyken on, and Sean has only raved to me about Taj Gibson too. I've heard nothing but great things about anyone who's ever covered him.
Same. I've never heard anybody say anything that wasn't great about Taj Gibson.
Yeah. Do you feel like Tibbs' defensive scheme overall is the right fit for this collection of players? Like, I guess what I'm asking is, The team's been terrible defensively, and people are just sort of wondering, wow, is Tibbs getting through to them? Is this scheme the right fit for these players? Are they just not getting it, or what? You know, they're basically trying to figure out what the hell is wrong and why a guy who has been known with defense being his calling card as a coach, why this team is in the bottom five of every defensive category.
Maybe because you're starting Shabazz Muhammad next to Andrew.
That's true. Yes, that's part.
That
of it,
is
yes.
A big thing.
Correct me if their defensive principles are pretty simple. Like,
yeah,
they're pretty easy to get and pretty consistent.
Yeah.
Like,
and that's why it's so mind-boggling. Yeah, like, why isn't it
simple.
Working?
Like,
why are these guys not?
They
getting
should
it?
Yeah. be able to be 15th in defense.
Yeah,
like they should be able to.
They
do
shouldn't
that.
Be allowing 114 points a game.
Right, they should be. I forget where they are in D rating, but it's something real. Real
it's bottom five. Of the
bottom
league,
five.
For sure,
there you
yeah.
go.
And
I know.
Like,
points per opponent's points per game is last. D rating has to be bottom five.
To me, yeah. here's what irks me. First off, when I turn on a Wolves game and I see that Andrew Wiggins still is not in a defensive stance 8 seconds into a possession, and he's kind of standing there with his arms down, I'm like, come on, like that's a thing that you can do. Andrew Wiggins is too good to do that, and he's still so young. So maybe I'm being too harsh, but he's so talented, and he was a good defender at Kansas too. And I watch that. I'm like, oh, come on, man. And they don't get back in transition well enough. And like when I say that, I don't even mean necessarily like people associate transition with stopping fast breaks, but I don't even mean that. Like there are times, of course, where like happened a few times again, that Pacers game where the Pacers were just able to throw the ball over the top of the defense and get layups because guys didn't go back. But it's not even that. It's that like even when they stop fast breaks, they're not able to get the matchups they want.
No.
And then teams are able to like force mismatches in the
half
court.
And just knowing where to go. And,
exactly.
Yep.
When you get Jeff Teague having to pick up a big man in transition because two guys don't run back hard enough, then you got Teague guarding the big man or you got a big man guarding a point guard or something, and it's a problem.
Well, like, Manny, was it the Pacers or the Pistons game where they got outscored in fast break points 24-0?
That was the Pistons game.
Yeah, like wow. How? With this such a young team.
24-0 in fast break points.
That should be athletic and 24-0.
That's rough. That's bad.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
That is bad.
Yeah. With Wiggins too, it's just it's so hard to just try and understand because I would look at just footage from last year of his defense, and there were times where just the closeouts were just either late or they were just
the Jazz game
slow.
Last Friday. When I was like, how does Ingles keep getting open? And you're like, oh, well, Wiggins decided not to rotate over or close out. And so Towns had to come, flailing in at the last second to try and contest it, and Ingles hit it.
Yeah.
Just little things like
that. And you're
that.
Thinking, okay, well, maybe you should put Jimmy Butler and Joe Ingles, but then that leaves the problem of Rodney Hood on the other side.
Who is also going off.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, it's
also, Joe Ingles is pretty much better than LeBron at this point. So,
here's what you may have missed on a recent Purple podcast.
Because now the NFC North is really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Detroit does not look like a good team. I never thought they were a good team. Even when they were 3-1, they, to me, did not look like a great team. They didn't do a whole lot in the offseason to improve their defense, which is still pretty poor. And I've never bought into Matt Stafford being a top-notch quarterback. I think he's just good and really great occasionally. So you would still be in a great situation, even if Keenum had to play the rest of the year, to make the playoffs. But I think now, as we get to 5-2, you start to look at the other teams in the NFC and start to stack yourself up against them and ask, where are we going to fit if you make the playoffs, assuming that you do? If you're 6-2, you should make the playoffs, unless it happens as it did last year.
You can find the Purple Podcast on iTunes, Podcast One, or 1500ESPN.com's podcast page.
So, going forward now with the Thunder, I mean, how good can they be? Do they have Golden State is the favorite? They're going to be the favorite. They're everybody's favorite to win it all again. But how much can they challenge the Warriors if they were to meet in the playoffs? If they meet in like the Western Conference Finals or something like that, how much of a run can they give Golden State with this currently constructed roster?
I think they probably have, and I'm putting myself at risk of sounding like part of the Homer Oklahoma City media with this, but
typical Fred.
Yeah, exactly. Classic. The first thing I think of when people look at me is like, clearly I'm just a classic Oklahoman. I think that they can challenge Golden State as well as any other team in the NBA. I just think they have the roster composition to be able to do it. Now, maybe like Melo guarding Draymond Green is something they really exploit. Maybe they just run Draymond Green pick and roll, you know, Curry Draymond pick and roll, you know, Durant Draymond pick and roll over and over again. And they exploit the middle of the floor and they're able to get layups and catch and shoot threes out of it. And Golden State really beats down on them. But I think there are ways, like there's a lot of defensive versatility on this team. I mean, yeah. Jeremy Grant guards a ton of different positions. Steven Adams has been excellent defensively. I thought he struggled a little bit during that Minnesota game on Sunday and then parts of their previous game, the Utah game, which was on Saturday. But he has really been so good defensively.
Well, couple games is really just trying to get your legs underneath you, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was excellent defensively during the preseason, too. And he just looks like, I think, a different guy. And then you got Paul George and Robertson on the wings. Both of those guys can guard, you know, at least three positions, if not four. You know, Billy Donovan's been playing Josh Huestis now, guarding, you know, he played him against Minnesota.
He got a lot of burn in that game.
Yeah, and he got 26 minutes the other day, too, when Paul George was in foul trouble. And Huestis is guarding fours, he's guarding threes, he guarded, you know, Wiggins, he guarded Butler in that game. And, like, he played him at center at points during the preseason, too. Like, it's modern NBA. You know, they've had lineups where Melo's been the biggest guy on the floor. So I wonder, you know, just their defensive versatility. Like Patterson can guard a bunch of different guys. Westbrook is not a good pick and roll defender, and overall I would say he's a below average defender. But if he's got a defensive strength, it's that he can switch on to bigger guys. Like they have a switchy type of defense, and they've been switching a lot, and I think it's a good way to be able to try to construct a roster to go up against Golden State or to go up against Houston, who can do similar things.
Yeah, I asked that because it just seems like...
To be clear, I'm not picking them to be Golden State. Just to be clear, I'm not even coming close to doing that. I just think of all the teams, they and Houston have the best shot.
Well, because that's... I mean, if you're going to have a chance to beat Golden State, I'm not even saying if you're going to beat them, but if you're going to have a chance to beat them, you do need versatility defensively because they are so versatile on offense and they have four or five guys on the floor at all times that can spread the floor for other people. And so you're going to need to have long athletic. I'm using David Kahn terminology here. Forgive me. but you're going to need to have long athletic guys that are versatile that can defend multiple positions, right?
Yeah, for sure. And even like, man, they've been playing Terrence Ferguson a little bit early in the year, which is not something that I expected, but like Billy Donovan is constantly, I had this moment where I asked Billy about Ferguson, who's like 19 years old and legit has a case for skinniest player in the NBA. Like, oh my God, he's so skinny. And that dude is like all leg too. He wears like these short
shorts.
Thunder
had a couple guys like that. I think DeAndre Liggins was like that or someone.
Yeah, he's like Brandon Ingram skinny. Or like he like looks, he's like
Scott Labissiere.
Yeah, or like young Durant, like when Durant couldn't do a bench press. Like that's what he looks like. He is so skinny, but like Donovan talks about how quick his feet are. He had this like Rex Ryan moment the other day when he said, like, I love his feet. He has amazing feet. And That is a Jets fan thing to say. But they've got guys who can, I don't think Ferguson is gonna be in the rotation late, but like he's another guy who, if everything goes absolutely right, he's another guy in a year or two who can contribute in that same sort of fashion. And this is an organization that's always like those kind of long, raw, athletic guys who they can develop, and he's just another one who will be in the system.
That's a good point, because I just think, you know, DeAndre Liggins, although he was with Miami, I think, before OKC, but then Hashim Thabeet, too. They tried to reclaim that.
Yeah, I mean, look, they made the Jeremy Grant trade.
Yeah.
They drafted Andre Robertson in the first round when a lot of people didn't want Robertson. He's that same kind of way. Huestis, they took 29th in the first round and drafted and stashed him in the D League for the first time a team's ever done that, when a lot of people didn't even know if Huestis was going to be drafted. Like, they really like their, like, raw, long, athletic wings who can defend multiple
positions. It's just funny to me because whenever a team gets – a good team drafts, you know, a player that's, you know, good value becomes good. It's like, well, gosh, it's so unfair that they got that guy. It's like, well, why didn't the other 28 teams picking in front of them just take them? It feels like we do this every year too with like Golden State and Jordan Bell and one of the guys before. I can't remember who it was, but it just seems just so funny to me that people just don't realize, well, why don't the other teams in front of them just pick them?
Yeah, you know what also bothers me about those statements too? Like, I really think unless you're like just a mega star, like DeMarcus Cousins going to the Kings, like he went to a bad environment, but like he was still going to become DeMarcus Cousins no matter where he is.
Yep.
But like so much of drafting is not the actual selection of talent. It's developing the talent, mm-hmm. going to a good spot. Yeah. Like the reason that the Spurs are able to get guys who contribute late is not just because they identify talent. It's because they harvest the talent once it's actually there. And so many other organizations, like guys just, it sucks for the guy who gets drafted, but he's just not in the right place. Like if you go to the Kings or you go to the Knicks, you're not going to be developed as well as if you go to an organization like the Spurs. It's not going to happen. And I feel like that kind of gets lost in it too, because once you pick the guy, the process isn't over. Like,
well, there's a reason those teams are good too. It's because they do things like that. They know how to develop players. And there's a reason why the Kings and the Wolves are usually at the top of the lottery, because they don't develop the players that they take year after year.
Yeah. Has the fan base down there, have they moved on from Kevin Durant? Or are they still they're still hating them pretty good down there?
Oh my God, no. That's the easiest question anyone's ever asked me. No, of course not. No, absolutely not. They are going to boo so hard when the Warriors come to OKC in November.
Yeah.
No, they haven't. And I don't think Durant has necessarily made it easy for them, like with the Twitter stuff and all the other stuff he said, but like, yeah,
the fake Instagram account.
Oh my God, my parents' divorce was significantly more amicable than that.
Oh goodness, Fred, we could have you in for 3 hours, man. It'd be great. But
if you're back on the next road trip, we'll have to have you in or Skype in or something.
We'll do it again.
Fred Katz, you can find him in the Norman Transcript. And you have a podcast of your own, too, of course. Plug that a little bit.
Let's plug it. So I've actually got two. I'm going to plug both.
Awesome.
So I've got the OKC Dream Team, because we're super humble and named it the Dream Team. And it's me and Andrew Schlecht, John Hamm, not the actor, OKC radio personality, and Royce Young from ESPN is like a special guest who comes on there a lot. And,
nice.
And we go once a week and just talk Thunder stuff, and you can find that patreon.com/OKC Dream Team. It's $4 a month to subscribe, and you get all of our content. And I also do a post-game show called Thunder After Dark, which is exactly what it sounds like. 82 episodes in the regular season, postseason shows also, and that's also Patreon, so patreon.com.
Is Thunder After Dark only 18 plus?
Yes. Actually, somebody, when I announced it like a week and a half ago, like the logo is supposed to look like a nightclub sign, and somebody tweeted at me that logo looks really seedy. It made me want to subscribe more, and I was like, I'm going to block you. But that's patreon.com/thunderafterdark2, and you can subscribe $2 a month for that.
Awesome! Thanks for coming in, man. We appreciate it. It was great to have you in studio. Sometimes when we get our guests on the phone or Skype or anything, we can, you know, it can be a little bit tougher, but we've always had good guests. They've always been a lot of fun, and you've been certainly no different, so we appreciate you coming in. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right, Fred Katz, join us here on the Raised by Wolves podcast. Thunder and Wolves tonight. I mean, we're depending on when you're listening to this podcast. But thanks for listening to the Raised by Wolves podcast once again. For Fred Katz, thanks to him for joining us. And for Derek James, I'm Manny Hill. And enjoy your Wolves basketball, and we'll talk to you again soon.